This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. On today's show, Storytelling with a Beat. We'll have a conversation with Glenn Washington, host of NPR's Snap Judgment, which you'll soon be able to hear on WVXU and WMUV. First this afternoon, if you've paid or are paying into the Social Security system, you have several things to consider and decisions to make before you turn 62, the earliest age you can begin collecting retirement benefits. Here to look at the many factors that can affect the amount you receive in Social Security benefits are Susan Denny, Public Affairs Specialist from the Social Security Administration's Cincinnati office, Cam Carver, Technical Expert from Social Security, and Chris DeSimio, a financial advisor with Wells Fargo Advisors in Cincinnati. And if you have any questions, give us a call at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Sue, Cam, and Chris, good to see you this afternoon.
It's always good to be here, Mark.
Yeah. Chris, start us off, though. We had some numbers come out this morning, some job numbers that were pretty significant.
Just a few. Right. Yeah. The market had been looking for more than 200,000 non-farm payrolls. Again, this has been a long-standing streak of this kind of job growth, and the number today was 142,000, and the futures were up about 100 points before this came out, and then they were down. All the gain vanished within seconds, and then sharply negative. And by the time the market opened up this morning, the Dow Jones Industrials was down over 200 points, and it was like, It was like Charlie Brown having the football pulled away from him, because people were kind of hoping that this number would be strong enough that it would finally give the Fed the umbrella needed to say, oh, yes, we could now raise interest rates. And this number called a lot of that into question. Not only was the September number lower than people had thought, but both July and August numbers were revised lower as well. And so this had a lot of people rethinking things. The interest rate on the 10-year Treasury plunged from 2.04 all the way into the 1.9% range. It also weakened the dollar. And as the day has gone on, because you would think, oh, my gosh, the sky is falling and we're going to be hoarding, turnips and trying to look for, stones to build a little hovel with. Well, as we speak, here we are, October, it's Friday afternoon, October 2nd, a little after 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And as we speak, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is up over 50 points.
Well, you were mentioning the Fed earlier. I mean, so the likelihood now is that people think the Fed's not going to raise rates as soon as initially thought.
Well, even if they do begin to raise rates, this might take some of the sharp edge off the angle of ascent for rates. And so gradual is, something that's more easily understandable and digestible. It was interesting to watch the sectors of the market that started doing better right away. Utilities, the defensive sector of the market, those were the first things to rally out of the gate. Then healthcare, because if the dollar was weakening, then that would take these big multinationals that do business overseas, it would take some of the headwind away. So healthcare has been strong all day, and now some of the consumer sectors that sell overseas, they're doing okay too. So it's in energy higher today. So just a strange looking day. But again, it would have been hard to predict at 9:32 this morning that by 1:09 in the afternoon that the Dow would be up by 60 points. But that is precisely where we sit.
Okay.
Aren't you glad you asked?
Yeah. I'm not so sure now. But thank you anyhow, Chris. Anyway, moving on to our conversation about Social Security. Again, we have Sue Denny and Cam Carver joining us. And Sue, can you give us some perspective on this? Just how big a role does Social Security play in a person's retirement years?
Well, I will tell you that for two out of three seniors, it is their primary source of income, if not their single source of income. So it is extremely important. We used to refer to as Social Security as the third leg of a three-legged stool. What we're finding is that stool is becoming a two-legged stool, and so many of so many companies are eliminating pension plans. And so Social Security is becoming increasingly more important.
And unfortunately, given the savings rate, that many people are woefully unprepared for retirement, so the personal savings leg of the stool has been wobbly for a while, and with traditional pension plans also becoming scarce, it's more like a one-legged pogo stick people are trying to balance on sometimes.
Exactly. And that's why we're going to mention the My Social Security account. That's a place where anybody 18 and older can create an account and look at their Social Security statement with estimated projected benefits for retirement, disability, and survivor's benefits. Although, obviously, that's an important tool for people, 55 and older, I want young people starting their first jobs to look at this statement, because if they have an opportunity to put into a 401k that's matched by their employer, I want them to take that opportunity. If they start saving earlier, it's going to be a more comfortable retirement for them. So I want all workers to create a My Social Security account and look at their Social Security statement.
Now, just to be full and fair disclosure, a lot of people who try to go to the Social Security website, including yours truly, it's not quite like running a Prius out of gasoline, but it's close. Trying to get through, there are a series of really tough hurdle-type questions to answer because they go back way far into your financial past to get into the website.
Well, Chris, I will tell you this. The older you are, maybe the more difficulty you have with the questions. And that is because these are a series of multiple choice questions based on data that we have from a third-party authentication service.
Yes.
They might have to do with the make and model of your car.
A loan you had. Where you lived.
Correct. And so the further they're going back, the harder they are. Probably about 30% of individuals who try to sign on to a My Social Security account, try to register, they are unsuccessful. But then 24 hours later, they can try again.
It's 24 hours.
But it's important to know why you do that, though. I mean, this is to protect a person's identity.
Absolutely.
You took the words right out of my mouth.
That's
absolutely.
Sure. That's the mother lode.
That's exactly right. Because it's because of the very private information that we make available online, we want to make sure you are who you say you are. So we're going to ask you those normal questions, your name, your date of birth, your place of birth, Social Security number. And then once you pass that first level, then we're going to ask you several multiple choice questions.
Yeah. So it's a good idea when you do that to try to do it from the privacy of your own home where you have access to all your records, all your stuff, because they might... You just never know. It's hard.
But just keep in mind that if you get a question wrong, we're not going to tell you which question you got wrong. But just sign on again 24 hours later. Three strikes and you're out. Then your option would be to come into one of our offices, show us your driver's license, your state ID, and then we can bypass all of those questions.
Cam and Sue, who does and who does not pay into the Social Security system? What are the guidelines there, Cam?
Well, basically, anybody that's working for a private employer typically pays FICA taxes. They pay into the Social Security system. So you're paying into the system. Eventually, if you work enough and have enough earnings and covered under our system, you're going to be insured for benefits. Folks that are not covered under our system tend to be public employees, government employees in various states that do not pay into Social Security. So, for example, in the state of Ohio, most, if not all, public employers pay into other state pension systems and do not pay into Social Security. So those folks would have pensions available to them from those public pension systems. And if they worked under our system, they may be eligible for both. So sometimes it's a mix.
And we got a phone call from Rick. He wanted to know, how does Social Security pertain to windfall tax and public retirement systems?
Yeah, the windfall elimination program.
Mm-hmm.
The windfall elimination provision is one of those laws that applies to an individual who's worked in those public systems that Cam talked about. That could be OPERS, the Ohio Public Employees Retirement System.
State teachers,
state employees, civil service retirement system. The key is, if you have your 40 credits from Social Security, you absolutely will get a benefit, but it's going to be reduced once you also start getting that public pension. And the maximum reduction, if you were filing this year, I believe, is $413 per month. It's very complicated. It does apply to a huge number of workers in the state of Ohio, because we do have a huge number of non-covered government employees.
So if your benefit was going to be like $2,000 a month, but you're subject to the windfall elimination provisions, then it can be reduced down to $1,583.
That's right. Correct.
And that's not to be confused then, Cam, with the government pension offset, is it? They both have government involvement, but it's a different
situation. In the mind of so much of the public, they're such similar things that they can get confused a lot. But basically, the windfall elimination provision is a change in the way we compute your benefits that you would receive on your own work record. So you're filing for retirement. It changes the way we compute the benefit and causes sometimes a reduction. The government pension offset is a change in the way we can pay benefits to you as a spouse or as a widow on your spouse's record. So the way the government pension offset works, the general rule is that we have to look at your gross amount of your government pension, take 2/3 of that, and we have to offset that from what we can pay you on a spouse's records.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, sometimes that 2/3 offset can be the entire benefit and you don't get paid anything, or it can be a partial payment of the amount that you're entitled to because 2/3 is less than your actual entitlement amount.
So if, for example, then, if you are a retired teacher and your spouse worked for a private company and you're collecting a benefit on his or her claim.
Right.
And then that person passes away and you're receiving your state teacher's retirement or public employee retirement, it's going to be offset against that.
Right. If I understand your scenario correctly, you have a worker who's paid into Social Security, spouse who has not.
Right. The worker passes away and the spouse had been getting a benefit, a spousal benefit, but the spouse's benefit from their own work at state teacher's retirement or state employee retirement system or PERS, wherever, is so much that it could actually completely eliminate the Social Security.
And
sure.
And Chris, let me make sure that our listeners understand why. We pay benefits to dependent spouses, and that is the reason why a spouse is able to get a benefit on the worker's record, either because they have no Social Security benefit on their own record or they have a small Social Security benefit on their own record. But OPERS, STRS, SERS, these are alternatives to Social Security. If you have a $5,000 STRS pension, you are probably not going to be able to get a spouse benefit or a surviving spouse benefit because you're really not dependent. If you had a $5,000 Social Security benefit, which you never would, but if you did, you would not be able to get surviving spouse benefits either.
Interesting way to look at it.
Sue's point's well taken. Part of the definition of these spousal and widow benefits was that the person was dependent on that worker. And in these scenarios where there's no money payable after the government pension offset, it's a situation where that person really wasn't dependent on that worker. They had their own pension that was in actual fact higher. I can give an example from my own life. My wife's a teacher. She pays into state teacher's retirement. She's certainly not dependent on me. She's not my dependent spouse. She makes more money than I do. When she goes to file for state teachers, she's going to get that pension. When I die, most likely she will never receive a dime on my record except for the small lump sum death payment. She won't get anything on my record because her pension is so much higher. She earned more than me. She was never dependent on me. In fact, I'm modestly dependent on her, I guess.
513-419-7100 to join the conversation. Let's talk with Larry in Cincinnati. Hi, Larry.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
Okay, I have a question. My wife has worked about 20-some-odd years paying into Social Security. She now, for the last 13 years, works for the Cincinnati Public Library, and she pays into OPERS. Now, how does that work? Is she considered a government employee or just a public employee?
It's really a little bit of a semantics question. It's not really so important, but she's a public employee. She's paying into OPERS, the Ohio Public Employees Retirement System, and she will eventually, unless she meets some of our few exceptions, she would be subject to that government pension offset rule if she ever became entitled to or eligible for payments on your work record.
But Larry, let me also add that we are going to look at how many years of substantial earnings she has under Social Security. And the more years of substantial earnings she has, the less of a reduction there is going to be in her benefit amount due to that OPERS pension she gets. We do have a website. It's a portal for government employees, such as your wife. So I'm going to encourage listeners. We have two calculators there, the web calculator, the GPO calculator. It's at socialsecurity.gov/GPO-WEP. So that's where I would go for additional information.
And there's a link to that on our website, wvxu.org, as well. And we'll continue our conversation about the ins and outs of Social Security. If you have any questions, give us a call at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney. My guest this afternoon, as we look at the many factors that can affect your Social Security retirement benefits, Susan Denny, Public Affairs Specialist with the Social Security Administration Cincinnati office, Cam Carver, Technical Expert from Social Security, and Chris DeSimio, a Financial Advisor with Wells Fargo Advisors in Cincinnati. And you can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Cam, I think one thing that always confuses me is all the different ages. 62 is the earliest, but there are several other entry points into Social Security, mm-hmm. aren't there?
For sure. At Social Security, the main one that you mentioned.
Earliest one, 62,
yeah,
right?
Earliest okay. one is
for retirement.
Right. For retirement benefits. So if someone filing for retirement benefits on their own record, his or her own record, is age 62. But for other benefits, there are all kinds of entry points. A child can be entitled to benefits on a deceased or disabled or retired parent's record virtually at any age, from the month of birth on until they reach termination at age 18. Or if the child is disabled at that point where they reach age 18, the benefits can go on indefinitely if they remain disabled. So there's those points. Widows become eligible at age 60. If a widow becomes disabled within 7 years of her husband's death, he or she can become eligible at age 50. There's a whole host of benefits we have at Social Security.
And so 62 is the first one.
And then if you wait until full retirement age.
What's that age,
Sue? It's now 66 for people born between the years of 43 and 54. But for individuals born in 1960 and later, our full retirement age is 67. The point to keep in mind is that the longer you wait to take your retirement benefits, the higher your benefit is going to be. However, if you take an early benefit, you take a smaller amount for a longer period of time. So there is a break-even point. Cam, can you explain that break-even point?
To kind of put it in the most general terms possible, with any choice that you make in life, there's an upside and a downside. With filing for benefits early, as she said, you get a lower amount, but you started early. If you wait till a later time, you get a higher benefit, but you gave up a certain number of checks to get that higher amount. So let's say that you were thinking about filing at 62, decided not to, you're going to wait till you're age 66. You gave up 4 years of checks. That's 47 checks times however much that monthly amount would have been at that reduced rate. So to figure out the break-even point, what we typically do is we take up the total number of checks that you gave up, add that up into a pot of money. Let's say it's $50,000. Then we compare the difference between those two monthly amounts. So let's say the one benefit was going to be $1,000 a month at age 62, but waiting till 66, it would be $1,500. The difference there is $500. So to find out the break-even point, you would divide that $500 into the whole chunk of $50,000 that you gave up, and that'll kind of tell you the number of years it would take you to make up that lost money. So when we do that, that was just made-up figures off the top of my head, but when we do that, generally what that comes down to is a person filing for a benefit now rather than waiting for a later point, it usually takes you anywhere from 12 to 15 years to make up that lost money. If you were to die anytime before you reach that break-even point, which usually ends up being somewhere around age 78 or age 80, you'd never recover that lost money, and you'd sort of have ended up not have chosen wisely. You know?
So just to make sure I've got this, if you start at age 62, the payout's lower, mm-hmm. but you have a chance of getting it for a longer stretch.
Correct.
If you wait till you're 66 or 67, whichever age is applicable there, mm-hmm. you get a higher amount, but you're taking it for less time.
Yeah. But also so. Keep in mind that people they tend to underestimate their longevity. And so when you take your benefits at 62, you're making, generally speaking, a permanent decision. Your benefit is not going to go up except for the annual cost of living adjustment for most people. So if you're very healthy, maybe you're still working. There are reasons to delay, but I think, you know, everybody's situation is different, and you do need to definitely look at your own situation when determining what is the best age for you to retire.
So have they ever figured out how many different options there are when it comes to Social Security?
You know, it's so funny because you hear so much in the financial media about strategies and maximizing your benefits and... You know, I'm sure that Social Security hasn't figured out how many options there are, but you'll hear that there are thousands and thousands. But, Cam, what's your response to that?
The number of options? unlimited as far as I know. Well, what I usually tell people looking to file for benefits at Social Security is that the simpler your life history is, the simpler it is for us to give you your options that you have here at Social Security. But our job is also to cover the other end of the spectrum. If you have a complicated marriage history, complicated family history, our job is to let you know what all those scenarios are. You know, when I'm interviewing people with appointments to file for retirement and I start going into their marriage history and I find out they've been married 3 or 4 times and they could be eligible on 2 or 3 sometimes different spouses' records, that's a lot to cover. But it's, you know, it's what we need to do at Social Security is give you good information about what all your options are, let you ask us questions about the ups and downs of those different options, and then let you choose.
513-419-7100 to join us, and let's talk with Jean in Kenwood. Hi, Jean.
Hi. I was wondering about people that are like in real estate that are contractors, self-contractors, and wondering about how much money. How do you determine how much money you would end up making in for Social Security in the end?
For the self-employed, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. For most employees who are not self-employed, we pay a 7.65% tax rate that is then matched by our employer. When you're self-employed, you are paying that entire freight. You are paying your own the employee as well as the employer share.
Well, and I would add to that also that if you are self-employed, if you're reporting your earnings to the IRS as a self-employed person, the only part of your earnings that come to our records to compute your Social Security benefits is your net self-employment earnings. It's not your gross. So that's what shows up as what you actually earned for our purposes in computing benefits.
Let's talk with Angie in Blue Ash. Hi, Angie.
Hello. My question is, I had heard about filing at 62 and then suspending the payments. And then when you start taking the payments, say at 67, you're going to get a higher amount because of the interest gained. But do you also get the higher amount like you were just first applying at 67?
Here's the trouble with the scenario you are mentioning. You cannot file and suspend at 62. You do not have that option unless you delay taking any benefits, either your own or a spouse benefit, until full retirement age. Only at full retirement age can you elect to file and suspend. That way, you can wait to take your own benefits and earn an 8% increase for every year that you delay.
There is one exception to what Sue just said, and I didn't learn about it until the other day, and I've never actually seen anyone pursue this option, but it's my understanding that if someone made the decision, as she was talking about, to file for benefits early, say at age 62, and they started drawing checks, once they get to age full retirement, which would be, in this case, usually age 66, they can put in a request to us to stop paying benefits, and then we will begin accumulating what we call the delayed retirement credits, which will offset the reduction in our benefits. So someone could file at 62, receive checks until their full retirement age, have us stop paying them, and then whenever they restart receiving checks, like say they wait till age 70, and then they have us start paying them again, we would recompute their benefits and consider those two things together, the reduction for the early months, the delayed retirement for the older months, or for the months beyond age full retirement, and then pay them the benefit based on the combination of those two periods where they were both receiving and not receiving.
Grace sent us an email. She's semi-retired at 40. She's working part-time. She wants to know how that might affect her Social Security at age 62. So semi-retired 40, and she's working part-time now.
What's interesting is many people do not realize that we actually calculate your benefits based on 35 years of earnings. They think we use your highest three or your last five, but we are actually using 35 years of earnings. And if you only have 25 years of earnings, then we're going to use 10 zero years in your benefit computation. So if this caller is, you know, only working part-time, she might have 20 years as a full-time worker, but the rest of her years are going to be part-time earnings. That could certainly mean she's got a lower benefit amount.
Let's talk to Tim and Amberly. Hi, Tim.
Yes.
Go right ahead.
Well, my question is this. My wife is 62. I am 63. If she were to take her Social Security benefit at age 62 and I was to wait until my full retirement age, say at 66, could she stop her benefit at age 6 that would be then her age 65 and start taking half of my full benefit at that point?
If she's already filed... Yeah, I think I understand your question. If she has already filed and is entitled on her own record, and then she wants to switch over onto your record at age 65 or something, she has to be eligible on your record. And the way we determine that is we have to look at her earnings record and your earnings record. And it's a little bit complicated, but we look at the average earnings that each of you had over the years while you were working. And unless your earnings were more than twice what hers were, she wouldn't be eligible to any benefits on your record if she's already entitled on her own.
Because the maximum she is due as your spouse while you are alive is 50% of your benefit amount. So the only way she's going to be due a spousal benefit is if her own benefit is less than 50% of yours. But Camlet, she takes her benefits early, which is going to be a reduced benefit. How does that come into play with the 50% of his?
Well, he has to be entitled. If it's a current spouse of yours, you have to be entitled, so you have to file. And then she would be eligible for the difference between what she's receiving on her own record and what she's due on your record if she was only entitled on your record. So it's the difference between the two is what we could pay her on your record.
And let's talk with Janet. Hi, Janet. Hi, Janet. You there?
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah,
you're on.
Hello. Yeah, I had a question. You're talking about dependents. I'm going to be 65 in December, and I have an 8-year-old daughter that I adopted. I mean, is she entitled to any kind of benefit?
You would be surprised at how many older workers do not realize this. So your child is your dependent, and she will remain your dependent up until the age of 18 or 19 if she's still in high school. So that could possibly be a reason for you to take your benefits early, because
Absolutely. That's
the only reason that's the only way your daughter is going to be able to draw dependent benefits on your record.
And the important thing to also keep in mind in a scenario like this is that a child's benefit is not reduced for age. So when we talked earlier in the program about those break-even points of when you recover lost money, it's even farther and farther in the future if you have a child that you give up for benefits because you don't file yourself. So even if you did a file and suspend option, you would want to get the child onto your record as soon as possible to begin receiving payments Because their benefits not reduced. There's no advantage for a child to wait to receive benefits if they can be entitled on a parent's record.
Now, this caller did not mention whether she was still working or not. That could make the difference, make a difference in terms of whether we will be able to pay benefits. But once she reaches full retirement age, there is no earnings limit. She can work as much as she wants, earn as much as she wants, and that dependent child will be able to get 50% of her benefit amount. And that is in addition to what the parent receives.
And she could also even pursue that option of filing and suspending, not drawing a dime on her own, and having the child on there drawing benefits while she waits to get those delayed retirement credits herself.
It's a big number, too.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And the idea is, you know, people will say to me, well, why do we do that? It is because we pay dependent benefits to the dependents of retired, disabled, and deceased workers. So even if she's still working, that child is still, under our rules, considered to be a dependent. And so that might be a reason for somebody to take their benefits early or, you know, to wait until full retirement age and file and suspend.
So I guess the big message is don't wait till you're 62 before you start thinking about this, right?
Well, absolutely. No, absolutely. And I think Cam made a really good point that the more complicated your family situation, if you have minor children, if you have disabled children who have been disabled since birth, if you have a divorce, if you have one or two dead spouses, you know, these are all things that make your situation more complicated in terms of deciding, well, which benefit do you take? And when, because you are able to toggle from one to another.
Well, thank you for joining me this afternoon, Sue, Cam, Chris. Susan Denny is a public affairs specialist with the Social Security Administration's Cincinnati office. Cam Carver is a technical expert from Social Security. And Chris DeSimio, a financial advisor with Wells Fargo Advisors in Cincinnati. As a reminder, the information provided on today's show is general in nature and may not apply to your personal investment situation. Up next, we'll hear from Glenn Washington, host of the NPR show Snap Judgment. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.